You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. My name is Kelsey Mowat, and joining me as always, Mr. Brendan Lear. Brendan Lear, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Big news for our American listeners, buddy. Canadian census released today, or the first initial statistics released. Compelling stuff, let me tell you.
I've had an anticipation headache for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. And then, you know, 300 was coming out, so I had like a day-long anticipation headache for that on top of my census headache, so unbelievable.
Well, Canada, for even our listeners worldwide, we actually get some listeners in over in Asia, in the UK, etc. Canada grew apparently 5.5%. We're over 30 million people now, so if I had the horns and special effects things geared up, but unfortunately I'm just too... not technologically savvy enough, we'd be doing some bells and whistles and et cetera right now.
And they're all moving to northern Alberta.
A lot of them to northern Alberta, lots to the urban areas, et cetera, but let's move on. No one really cares about that, but well, some people do. But probably most don't, and you're listening to an MMA show. 300, though, buddy, that's a nice plug. I'd like to see that movie. Did you see it yet?
Of course I did.
How was it?
I liked it. That was good.
Nice. You know, me being a history buff, I'm really looking forward to that show. I know it's only loosely historically based, of course, but really like Sin City, so I want to see that show, man.
It's not that bad. Yeah. You know, I know the story fairly well, and it's, you know, apart from some theatrical license, like, you know, making the Persian king 8 feet tall, it's not too bad. I like the stuff that Miller's done, and the most exciting part of 300 was I heard a rumor that he was also thinking about doing a Lone Wolf and Cub movie, which is, now I have an anticipation headache and it's not even started being made.
Well, let's move on to some MMA stuff here. We've got two interesting guests coming on the program today. We've got Kurt Pellegrino is going to be fighting Wander Braga coming up, and he'll be joining us to talk. Share his thoughts about that. It's an interesting matchup between two well-accomplished jiu-jitsu fighters, or jiu-jitsu black belts and instructors. And then we've also got Johnny Alessio coming on the program. He's going to be fighting for the WEC World Welterweight Championship against Carlos Condit, which is a great welterweight matchup, Brendan.
Always nice to talk to Mr. Alessio.
Yeah. And on a more somber note, with full FCF Radio, we want to extend our most sincerest condolences to the Gilbert Odana's family. Of course, if people haven't heard yet, it's been reported on pretty much all the MMA sites, etc. But Gilbert passed away in a tragic boating accident the other day, and so all of us want to extend our prayers and condolences to Gilbert Odana's family and friends.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets, to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now is the Batman. Kurt Pellegrino is going to be taking on Wander Braga at the upcoming UFC Fight Night, April 5th. Kurt, how are you doing today?
Doing very good, thank you very much.
Kurt, my first question for you is in regards to your upcoming opponent, a very well-accomplished jiu-jitsu practitioner, and I want to ask you a little bit more about that side of things, because you, of course, are an instructor and well-trained in jiu-jitsu. But the fact that Wander, when you look at his record, it looks like he hasn't fought in MMA since 2004, and I'm not sure how accurate those databases are, but that's at least what I could find. How does that set in your mind, the fact that he hasn't been in the ring in an MMA fight in, for a couple of years? Do you think that gives you an advantage?
I really do think that's an advantage for me, that he hasn't fought since 2004, because if you're not fighting, you're really not training like you should be. You can train, and you can help fighters. You can train and help jiu-jitsu guys train for tournaments, but to diet, to train the right way, to run, to work out, to ride the bike, to be the guy that's in the middle. I mean, that's a different type of training next to just, oh, let me go to the boxing gym and box, or let me just do jiu-jitsu today. You know, there's all types of waking up and eating the right way, so I think it's going to affect him a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's often said, Kurt, that the toughest part of your fight, the toughest part of fighting is actually training. How much risk do you decide to expose yourself to when you're training in terms of sparring and hard groundwork and things like that?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people at the highest levels train the same way I would train. I mean, I box 100% almost every day. I wrestle and do takedowns with college wrestlers and at 100% and do jiu-jitsu every night with my class in the gi and with Hermes and Rafael Chavez and Walt Boyds and Getz. So, I mean, I'm training pretty much, when I do train, 100% every time. I don't want Hermes to submit me, and he doesn't want me to submit him either, just like I wouldn't want a student to submit me. So that's why I submit them. And the harder I train, the harder I go, the better it is. That's why even when I'm boxing, I mean, if I can knock someone out in class, I will. And as well, they try to do me, too.
So how are you approaching this fight, then? Are you looking to keep the fight standing, Kurt? Do you feel that you've got the more clear-cut advantage in your boxing and wrestling abilities?
Well, you know, a lot of people tell me that he's very good with takedowns, that he's a takedown jiu-jitsu guy. Mm-hmm. So that's what I love to do as well. I love to do ground and pound and big slams. But for this fight, I just want to throw bombs, to be quite honest with you. I want to throw punches, and if he wants to keep it on my feet, we keep it there. If he wants to play jiu-jitsu on the ground, I'll keep it there. I just want it to be a really exciting fight and give the fans what they deserve, you know? It doesn't matter to me where this fight goes. It's okay.
And on the jiu-jitsu side of things, he's very well accomplished. I mean, as you are too, so that doesn't concern you. You feel like your abilities, at least in that area, are comparable?
Well, I've competed against some of the world champions in the sport in just straight jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, I mean, I'm in Abu Dhabi this year in May, a month after this.
Wow.
So my preparation for this is, I've won against the best in jiu-jitsu, and I felt like if I ever fought any of those guys in a full contact fight, I'd beat them up even more. So I'm glad that he's a good jiu-jitsu guy. I hope he wants to play jiu-jitsu with me, because I have a fast-paced jiu-jitsu game, and the more he plays jiu-jitsu, the more I'm going to throw punches and play as well. So, I mean, this has the set in my mind for the fight of the year, as long as we both come out and play. Or it could be a boring fight, because if you get two guys that are good at wrestling, two guys that are really good at jiu-jitsu, it's kind of like a stalemate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting what kind of a chess game we play.
Kurt, are you going to follow the Hermes Franca 2006 strategy of throwing crazy bombs and hoping it turns out for the best?
I'm definitely coming out throwing punches. And I've been working on a lot of big slams and big takedowns, and I've been doing a lot. Like I said, we're training in the cage every day. And my training partner is the guy that's going for the lightweight championship of the world. I train with him every day. I train NHB with him every day. So what happens in our camp is just for us, but I'm very confident going into this fight, fighting in the UFC against Juan de Braga. I'm not overlooking him, but I'm coming after him as if, you know, my next fight could be for the title as well.
Well, Kurt, how do you balance between sort of traditional technical boxing and the type of sort of atypical styles that Hermes has, throwing crazy bombs and punches, punches that are hard to track? How do you develop a balance for yourself in the more technically competent you become in boxing? Is there a balance that you have to develop, or do you just sort of let it loose when you get in the ring?
Well, you know, they always say when Hermes is fighting and when I fight, when we fight each other, it's more or less like a boxing match, with takedowns, and you gotta watch what's going on. When you fight in front of 6,000 people, 19,000 people, no matter what you do in training, you never do in a real fight. You just, whatever happens, you throw a punch at me, I might throw 8 punches back at you, but I might not have ever have done that. So what I'm trying to do is we're actually trying to make it a brawl every day. When there's 30 seconds left or a minute, we usually just draw a line on the floor and we don't even move and just throw bombs, and whoever falls down falls. You know, basically, we're trying to make it a brawl. I'm trying to make myself tired. I try to throw 100 punches in a 5-minute round. You know, just try to exhaust myself as much as I can. There's really no technique. If we just box, it's boring. So we really just try to come after each other as hard as we can.
We had Hermes on the show shortly after his win over Spencer, and we asked him about fighting in front of it was in Southern Florida, and fighting in front of some of the hometown fans, etc. Was that a big rush for you, Kurt, to be ringside and watch Hermes come off that big win, especially in front of a lot of your students, I would imagine?
You know, like I said, everyone always said, it's not me out there fighting. You know, everyone always says, it's not me, it's not my face. But when he fights, I feel like I'm in there with him. And before he fought, I said, no matter what happens inside that cage, I'm in there with you. My wrestling ability is inside of you. You know, my heart, everything I have is in you. So when you feel like you can't go no more, and it's just you in there, your Spencer Fisher was fighting me too. And when he won, it was like I won. And, you know, with all the fans being there and all our friends and our family and the students, I mean, that was probably one of the coolest ways to win, knocking a boxer out, you know, instead of submitting him.
Yeah.
So it was a great victory for him. But like I said, whenever Hermes fights, I really believe that I'm inside there. And, I don't know if I'm more nervous than he is, but I mean, I felt like I got hit too. So
it's funny you should mention that, because there's been a lot of criticism of the concept of the IFL, that it's actually a sort of team concept, and people like Dana White come out and say, you know, fighting's an individual sport. But it sounds like you guys at the Armory have a team, and that's something that's meaningful to you and helpful to you. Well, what do you think about that?
Well, the IFL, I believe it is a team sport. You need the 5 people on your team. You need 3 of them to win. If 3 loses, it's over. Your whole team loses, and the guys that win can celebrate, but your team loses. I don't think it's a team sport. It's like a wrestling or a boxing. There's no one out there that can win my fight for me but me. I'm the only one that can win my fight. I'm the only one that can get my butt off that stool and throw punches and takedowns. What I meant by that is, I trained so hard with Hermes and want him to win so bad that if he goes through pain, I'm going to go through it with him. When I went inside that ring, you know, you're not allowed to dump water on the guy. And I dumped the whole 16 ounce of water on Hermes just to wake him up, because I knew that's what I wanted. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't care. And they're like, don't do it. I'm like, I won't. And I did it anyway. because I'd want the same thing done to me. That's why I feel like when he fights, I'm there. I'm in here with him. We wrestled and we went over all those takedowns and it worked. So that piece of me was inside that cage with him that day.
Kurt, the last time you were on our show was just a couple days after your win, your first UFC win at UFC 64 in October. And that, obviously, at the time, you're extremely happy about your performance and the win, etc. But I wanted to ask you, has it been a different sort of outlook for you, a different sort of mindset preparing for this fight versus the fight with Azinkau at UFC 64 where you lost to Drew Fickett? Is there any kind of difference in your mindset preparing for this fight, or is it just a matter of you were always confident in your abilities and it didn't really matter?
I think for this fight, I'm angrier. And I'm a lot angrier, actually, for this fight than I was for my last fight. My last fight, I was supposed to fight Wander, and the complications happened, and everyone gets mad. And now they gave me Junior, and I was worried about Junior Cinzone just because I knew he was a brawler. And so all my training for 2 months was for someone that was completely a different fighter. So now it's back to, I got this fight again. I want this fight. I wanted this fight. I would have fought him in my backyard or at my own gym for all I would have cared. And now that I have it again, you know, it's like, okay, well, here it is. If you lose, is that what you really wanted? And that's why I feel like I'm training harder. And like I said, my training for this is pretty much the same way I trained for my last fight, but with a little bit more anger and a little bit more mean. And you know, I'm going to be ruthless in this fight. Either I'm getting knocked out and carried out on a stretcher, or he is.
Well, you mentioned that you're angry. Is that just because the fight was delayed, or is this more something personal has happened since then? What can you be a little bit more specific about the emotions, why you're having those feelings?
Just because I'm upset that he pulled out of the fight, you know, for the reasons or excuses that he used, that he chose to fight me, that he could have picked four people, but he picked me to fight. And I have no problem with Wander. I hope I could buy him a beer after the fight's over. But when that cage door locks, I want to punch him in his face.
Well, do you prefer to have a little bit of an edge, Kurt, going into a fight like that? Or are you a fighter that is fueled by emotion?
The more emotion I have, the better it is. And I'm fueled by it. And right now, I think this is like a grudge match. I think this fight should be the main event in my eyes. Uh-huh. You have two black belts, two good wrestlers, two guys that have never lost at 55. I've never even been pushed at 55 yet. I haven't even had a close fight at 55. I fought at 170 and beat up big guys. You know, Drew Fickett was the biggest fighter I've ever fought, and I was beating Drew Fickett up and down the mat.
Yeah.
And I love Drew Fickett. I thank God that he beat me, because he was the one that told me to go down to 55. So I want to, you know, thank Drew Fickett. Every day I train, I always say to myself, there's not a fighter out there at 155 that could go up to 170 and beat Drew Fickett. And that's the fuel, and that's the anger and the passion I have. There's just no way.
Well, the first time we talked to Hermes, I think you had five fighters at the Armory, all 155. So, are you sure you didn't just weren't forced to go to 155 to be in the Armory?
No, I was at ATT at the time, and I was 164, and they told me they had too many fighters at 155. Told me to go to 170. I wasn't very happy about the decision, but I got in the gym and lifted and worked out and got my body weight up, but every time for a fight, I weighed in at 167. I was never a true 70-pounder. And those are all my losses, my two losses that were at 170. You know, I try to erase that in my mind because I hate to lose. When I lose, I dream about it. I lose sleep, and I don't think I'm a normal person.
Was the separation between you fighters at the Armory and ATT, obviously it was some kind of personality conflict, but you both seem to be very respectful in leaving that out, and there doesn't seem to be really any animosity towards the teams.
No, I like I said, I'm friends with a lot of the guys that train at ATT, and talk to them on the phone. I worked down in Jupiter when I moved here, when I was with ATT. And Hermes left, and I thought Hermes was, in my eyes, the best 155-pounder I've ever trained with my whole entire life. And when he left, you know, when I worked at the school, it was, I made the decision for me and my wife just to move down here, and Joe Mullins, you know, gave me an opportunity to manage the school and help it out, and that's where I've been ever since, you know, because of Joe Mullins and Hermes Franca. You know, I have a house, I have a new baby girl, and fighting in the UFC, dream come true.
Kurt, I wanted to get your thoughts on a couple of matchups the same night that you're going to be competing, and there's a big one at 155, and that's between Melvin Guillard versus Joe Stevenson. Interesting to hear your thoughts. Joe Stevenson, well-known, great wrestling, good jiu-jitsu. Who are you picking in that fight?
Well, I picked the first round for a knockout with Melvin. Oh, wow. I think that anyone with explosiveness and hands like that, and the athletic that he is, he's so athletic that I think he can knock anyone out in the whole entire UFC at 155. But once Joe takes him down, unless Melvin's been working, it would be a submission or a referee stoppage from ground to pound.
And Kenny Florin versus Mishima?
That's one of the fights I'm having trouble calling. Kenny's a great friend of mine, and I hope Kenny Florin wins. But good judo versus good jiu-jitsu, I go with Kenny Florin.
And Drew Fickett's also competing. I mean, obviously not a lightweight, but he's taking on Nakamura. Do you have any thoughts on that fight?
You know, I would. Drew Fickett's one of the craftiest people I've ever met, and
he's good at embroidery and knitting and stuff.
Yeah, very good. He's very good. I think that you can beat up Drew Fickett to death, and I don't think you're gonna really hurt him. Mm. And that person just better either stall the whole time or Drew's gonna catch him.
Did you see his last fight against Carol Parisian?
Awesome fight.
Yeah, that was great.
Awesome fight. I think if Drew would have trained a little bit more, I think he would have beat him. Just had to win that one last round.
What is it about
certain fighters that just make, like, it seems to me that you know, guys like Parisian, every time he fights, it's a good fight. It's something interesting to watch, and his last fight was a great example. So what distinguishes fights like that between, you know, fighters like that, between, you know, fighters who, you know, people are just don't know their names or just a sort of average, or
because every time Caro goes out there, he doesn't care. He will stand up with you and throw 100 punches. He will throw you and try to finish you. The people that you see on TV right now are people that don't care if they lose, and that's the best part about being a fighter. You go out there to win. You just go out there, and whatever happens, happens. And that's really the way I'm thinking now. I'm just going out there and throwing punches, and that's what Kyle does. He'll finish you in 30 seconds. He's not going to take it out and go, I got to breathe. I got to breathe for a little bit. I just took him down. No, he's going to take you down. He's going to start elbowing you in the face and finish you. If he doesn't, okay, then he's just going to work for something different. But he's constantly going to try to end the fight. That's the difference. Ending the fight, try to end it all the time.
Kurt, my last question for you. Lately, most of the fighters that we have on, we get their thoughts on some of the upcoming fights, and some interesting comments from a lot of the different fighters about the upcoming fight between GSP and Matt Serra. What's your sense of this fight, Kurt, and do you think some people are looking past Matt Serra a little too much?
Well, Matt Serra is the coolest guy I've ever met my whole life. Mm-hmm. I love Matt Serra, and he's the best jiu-jitsu guy next to Renzo Gracie I've ever rolled with. And if Matt takes him down, he's going to finish him. And who knows? Matt's been working on his feet. He hits hard. You know, and they're both the same height. Matt's very small, but they're both the same height. And, you know, George St. Pierre is a phenomenal athlete, but jiu-jitsu and that all-around stuff, I mean, Matt stood in there with Dean Thomas and Yves Edwards, correct?
Yeah.
And stood on his feet. So Matt has the heart of a lion, and he's an Italian. So that helps him out a lot.
Right. Well, if you're a betting man, who would you bet? If you had to bet the house, who would you bet the house on?
I'll always bet for Matt Serra.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Brendan, do you have anything else for Kurt?
No, I got to go online and make some bets.
Matt Serra is one of my best friends. Not my best friend, but I love him to death, and if he was doing a seminar close to Florida, I would be there.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Well, Kurt, we appreciate coming on the show, of course. Kurt Pellegrino competing at the UFC Fight Night coming up against Wander Braga. Kurt, best of luck, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Good luck, Kurt.
Live at the LA Forum, March 17th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you four of the world's best mixed martial arts teams battling head-to-head. Brazilian legend Marco Ruas leads his Southern California Condors against Kenya Suda's Tokyo Sabres. Plus, Frank Shamrock pits his San Jose Razor Claws against Buzz Rutten's LA Anacondas in a North-South rivalry. Get your tickets now at the Forum box office or Ticketmaster.com.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio one more time is the natural Johnny Alessio, who's going to be taking on Carlos Condit at the upcoming WEC event, March 24th, for the World Welterweight Championship. How's it going tonight, John?
It's going good. Everything's going really good. Training's going good. I'm really excited about this fight.
And has anything changed as far as your usual training partners for this fight? I know in the past when we've had you on, you've been training with guys like Mac Danzig and Joe Riggs, etc. Anyone else new in the camp or where you've been training for this fight?
Well, I've moved to Las Vegas. I've been training full-time at Extreme Couture, at Randy Couture's new place. Actually, when I fought Brian Gastelum in my last fight, I came out here for 2 weeks to finish up my training, and just had a great 2 weeks out here. So after that, I decided to make the move and make this my new home for training. And I got excellent training partners. Of course, Randy Couture, a new UFC heavyweight champion, Forrest Griffin, Mike Pyle, Jay Huron. We got Frank Trigg and Phil Baroni popping through. Got Eric Pele, Kendall Groves, David Terrell, and, you know, just other guys always popping in, coming to train since it's such a good facility. It's been amazing.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about your last fight against Brian Gastelum. Your thoughts on that fight and leaving the UFC, and I guess in a way you're still competing for the UFC through the WEC, same ownership, but what was that like for you, and where does that win rank so far in your career in light of the fact that it's going to lead to a title shot here against Carlos?
It was a great fight. I mean, first of all, everything went just as planned. Training went well for the fight. The fight went just the way I wanted it to. I knew that, you know, I probably had the stronger ground game. I took him down pretty much in the first minute of the fight, and from there transitioned from half guard to full mount, where I started raining punches down until he gave me his back, and from there, you know, I took his back and went from back to mount a couple of times, and then finally secured the rear naked choke in the first round victory. So he really didn't take any punches at all in the whole fight, so the whole thing went just the way I wanted it to.
In a guy like Carlos, you've already fought some pretty top-notch fighters throughout your career, John. And some people, I've seen Carlos ranked even in the top 10 by some people's welterweight rankings. He's got some big wins over Renato Verissimo and Frank Trigg. I guess it's safe to say somewhat of an unknown commodity until he beat those two. What's your assessment of Carlos as a fighter, and what do you have to do to beat him?
You know, Carlos is a tough guy. Like you said, he's got some good wins over some good guys, so definitely not a guy that you want to take lightly. He is relatively, you know, unknown, you know, even for the big fights that he's had. He's got a really good record. I think he's like 20-4. So he's really, you know, proved himself to be one of the top welterweights out there. So not a guy really I'm actually training really, really hard. I'm probably in the best shape of my whole fighting career. We're going five-minute rounds, you know, since it's for the title. And, you know, there's nobody better than a trainer to get ready for a five-round battle than Randy Couture. You know, he's been in those fights, in those situations so many times, you know. So I'm ready, you know. I'm ready for any situation that this fight puts me in. I'm ready for any bad position. I'm just 110% ready.
I wanted to ask you about your last fight in the UFC. You went up against Diego Sanchez, and we had you on the show, and I know you thought you won that fight, and a lot of people are impressed with your takedown defense and what you demonstrated in that fight against Diego, who's still regarded as by many as one of the best welterweight fighters in the world. You had the win over Surjikov following that, and then against Thiago Alves, he gave you some difficulties with the leg kicks, etc. What was your original game plan going with Thiago? A lot of people see you as a striker and thought that was going to be a stand-up war, which it kind of unfolded as. But what was your game plan going in, and what went wrong against Thiago, Johnny?
Well, you know, Thiago, you know, I got to admit, I think I underestimated him a little bit, which I'll never make that mistake again in my career. I chalked that one up as a learning process for me. Even though I got a lot of fights, you could never, you know, never stop learning about situations to get put into. I think the mistakes I made was during training camp. I just concentrated so much on cardio. Like, I was in great shape for the fight, but I really think I overtrained. I put too much emphasis on my cardio and not enough emphasis on countering the kickboxing ability that he has, and definitely the wrestling. I really lacked on the wrestling, and, you know, once he started to, you know, he got a little bit better, you know, the better of me on the stand-up, especially with the leg kicks part. You know, I was beating him with the hands, I think, but, you know, the leg kicks were really landing hard on my leg, and was really starting to beat up my leg, and, you know, I could feel it, and, you know, no matter what, he could have kicked me another 25 times, and there's no way you're going to make me quit. Whether I, you know, I'll just go out on one peg if I have to, but you're not going to make me stop. But I really lacked the wrestling training for that fight. And so when I did try to take him down, I really struggled. And when I did get him down, it was at the end of the rounds. I just really didn't have the chance to capitalize on the position. And that's where my biggest mistakes was, just worrying overtraining and not working enough wrestling, really. But I'll never make that mistake again. You know, at Randy Couture's gym, we have a really well-rounded system. Of course, you know, I'm working with some phenomenal wrestlers there, so my wrestling will never be weak like that again. Because I've always had the ability to take down whoever I wanted in a fight if I want to take it to the mat. And that was the first time I really struggled to get somebody down. Mm-hmm. And it was really frustrating. You know, but I kept plugging away and, you know, kept trying and trying and trying, and I'm always going to be like that. I'm never going to stop. You know, I'm going to always try to do whatever I can do to win a fight. But, you know, he came out on top that night, and my hat's off to him. It seems to me like he really had the fight of his life that night also. He was fighting great that night, you know, and I wasn't. I was tired, you know, like right off the bat. And just think I overtrained for that fight and went in maybe a little too overconfident. So you'll never see that again.
Well, what's your experience been like in the WC? It's the same ownership now as the UFC, and you and a couple other guys are coming up on this card are in a unique predicament in the sense that you've competed in the UFC and you're now in the WEC. Brock Larson's another guy that comes to mind, Joe Riggs. Have you had any discussions at all, John, with anyone from the UFC that what could happen if you do beat Carlos and become the welterweight champion of the WEC? Are there opportunities for you still competing in the UFC?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure there is. I really haven't worried about it too much. I have a great contract at WC, getting paid good money. So I'm really, I mean, you know, if I have to stick around there for three or four fights, you know, that's fine with me. The money's good. It's, you know, this contract I have with WC was, you know, was actually worth more than what my UFC contract was, you know, so I'm getting paid more. So I really got, you know, no reasons to complain about being in either show. You know, WC is going to be televised here on cable real soon. The first show is going to go live in June. So, you know, to me, I'm just looking for quality opponents and getting paid. You know, and I'm just happy to be part of Zuffa, and they're treating me really good. And so I got really no complaints at all.
Did you, when you fought Surgikov, was that still the WC under prior ownership, or was Zuffa at that point? I can't remember. That was in August, so.
That was still old ownership, yeah. That was still okay. The original WEC.
And we've had a couple of other fighters on who've sort of competed in WC pre and then post UFC ownership. Did you notice any kind of change? Was it a discernible difference as far as product and just the professionalism behind it, or just the influx of money, etc.?
Well, WC paid me really good when I fought Alex. So I mean, definitely there's a money raise because, you know, I'm fighting for the championship and got this brand new contract, and, you know, I've got a few more fights under my belt, you know, with under UFC and WC, so, you know, I'm getting paid better. You know, as you go on, you get better money. As far as the show being run, I had no complaints the way it ran before when it was under old ownership, and now being under Zuffa, you know how Zuffa is, everything's run real smooth and taken care of, and it just is exactly the same as UFC to me, the way they do the weigh-ins, they bring you in, when they bring you in, they fly, you know, everything is just, it's the same, really. There's no difference other than three letters, UFC or WEC. That's the only difference that I see.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, they definitely had a well-established following, and a lot of people echo some of those sentiments that WEC was a great organization to compete for, regardless of who owned it. So,
yeah.
You know, you mentioned that you've gone to Vegas now, and you're training with Randy Couture, etc., and you and Joe Riggs have trained a lot in the past. Did you have a chance to talk to Joe as far as after his loss against Diego Sanchez, and now as he prepares for his upcoming fight in the WEC?
Yeah, me and Joe are, you know, we're really close. We're good friends. So, you know, I talk to him, you know, once or twice a week, you know, just to BS and whatnot. You know, he was really bummed out about the Diego Sanchez fight. He really, you know, like, you know, there's a punch that, you know, when they left hooked each other and he fell down, that wasn't, you know, that didn't hurt him at all. He was just caught off balance, and, you know, he was embarrassed by that and tried to get to his feet as quick as possible. And, you know, that's when he hit the knee, or got hit by the knee, I should say. And, you know, that's what put him on Clear Street. And so he was really disappointed about that, you know, but, like, he said going into that fight, that's probably the best he's felt as far as mentally being ready. So he was just disappointed that he really didn't get to, you know, impose his will out there, because, you know, he was actually, like, 100% mentally ready as well as physically ready for that fight. But I think any fighter, you know, you have to get the parent back from those, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't kill you, it only makes you stronger, you know. And so I think, you know, when you see Riggs come back, you're going to see a strong, confident Riggs.
And what's your thought on that? I mean, he's someone that the WC's been brought in, and I'm looking, I know you don't want to look past Carlos, but other welterweight fighters that have been signed by the WC could be potential opponents for you. Brock Larson is another guy. Anyone out there that you look towards if you get past Carlos as a serious title contender? And will Joe be fighting at 185 or 170?
Joe's fighting at 185. He's fighting a guy from Japan. Originally, he was supposed to be for the title, and now it's just a single bout. So I believe after that, you know, Joe will be fighting at 185 for the belt there. But me and Joe have expressed our feeling and UFC that you're not going to get us to fight each other. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to happen. We're good friends. You know, originally, you know, the title shot had been brought up to both of us. Riggs had even said, he's like, you know what, you know, you deserve to fight for a championship. You know, he's like, so if it comes down to, like, they lean towards me or whatever, you know, you go ahead and take the shot. So, you know, like, we got that kind of friendship, you know, where, you know, we both step aside for each other kind of thing if it was right for both of us, you know. But you're not going to see us fight each other.
Yeah. Well, do you have any thoughts on that? Brock Larson versus Eric Apple? I guess Eric Apple's known more as a striker, and Brock Larson's got that great wrestling background. I believe he's only lost once in his career. You have any thoughts on that fight, and who you could very well end up facing one of those guys?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about it. You know, you also got Tiki fighting Dave Terrell.
Right.
Dave Terrell, it trains with us, though, so probably won't see that happen either. But, I've thought a lot about, you say if, I say when I become the champion, everybody's going to be gone for me then. So it'll just be my job to keep a cool head and take on whoever the WEC feels like deserves a title shot against me. And I'm ready and willing to fight any of those guys. I've never been one to turn down a fight. So all I can say is, I'm a new John Alessio. With this training camp and this team around me, I have a whole new confidence about me. I've totally rededicated my life as of the first of the year. I've changed mentally and physically. There's no more, I don't party anymore. Not that I was a big partier before, but I just don't do it anymore. And I've focused my life on becoming the best MMA fighter I can. And I'm making sacrifices to do that. And that's going to make me a very dangerous opponent for anybody. So I'm ready, so I'm just telling everybody out there that they better be ready, too.
Wanted to hear your thoughts on a big upcoming welterweight fight. Actually, while we have you here, might as well ask your opinion on both. You've competed in the UFC, and you've competed against Diego Sanchez. Your thoughts on Sanchez versus Josh Koscheck, John?
Well, Diego won the first one. I'm right about that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I see a lot of improvements in Koscheck's game. He seems like he's made himself a little more well-rounded. He's got some stand-up now. He's always been a phenomenal wrestler. Diego's a good wrestler himself. I think Diego has the advantage in the submission world. But man, that's a tough fight to call. I really think it's going to come down to who wants it more. There's going to be times where both guys are going to be in trouble, kind of in bad positions, and just going to depend on who's mentally stronger and willing to really fight it out. I kind of have to lean a little bit towards Diego, but for some reason, I think that Koscheck could pull this one off and upset Diego. I'm kind of going back and forth with what I'm saying, so it's kind of a hard fight to pick. I'm just looking forward to seeing it, and I'm just really hoping that it's not going to be a boring fight.
Yeah.
Not criticizing Koscheck at all, but he's been known a little bit to be a blanket, as they call him. So I'm just hoping he comes out and puts on a good show. And Diego always presses the issue, so I'm not really worried about Diego putting on a good fight. But I'm just hoping that he doesn't get neutralized and it ends up being a boring fight. I just want it to be an exciting fight for the fans, of course, and UFC.
Yeah, well, I think a lot can be taken away even from your fight with Diego, just in the sense that you mentioned that Josh and Diego had fought prior, and it's not that Diego hasn't evolved as a fighter as well, because I'm sure he has, and he's still undefeated, so he deserves a lot of credit for that, but
right.
Someone like Koscheck, it looks like he's developed a stand-up game a lot as well, so it'll be interesting to see, if Diego had difficulties, never took you down, will he be able to get Josh down? So there's a lot of interesting tie-ins there, I think, as far as the stand-up game and who's evolved more standing.
Right, because, Diego said he's been working really hard on a stand-up. He's already said he was boxing up in Mexico City for a while, training, and I want to see all that training and talk, get put to the test. Hopefully ends up being a war.
And then the last one I want to ask you about, of course, is George St. Pierre, your fellow Canadian. Your thoughts against Matt Serra? A lot of people seem to be sort of looking past Matt Serra and looking to GSP and Hughes, the rematch, the rubber match, if you will. What's your thoughts on that fight, and do you think people are taking Matt Serra too lightly, John?
Yeah, I think some people are. Matt Serra is where he's at because of hard work and training hard and trying to be the best welterweight out there. That's what we all strive for. You can never count a guy out. You got to remember there's the factor, too, of anybody can be knocked out. Anybody can be caught. Just because George has been on this tear and seems to be unstoppable, doesn't mean you're not going to get cracked on the chin and, never go into a fight overconfident. I mean, I, like I said earlier in the interview, I made a mistake doing that. So I just hope that George is taking him real serious, you know, because we all know that this is Matt Serra's big, big opportunity right now. So he's probably working his butt off harder than he ever has, and that can be dangerous. When a fighter is motivated and mentally ready, that's dangerous. Now, he's got to go in there with confidence, though. If he doesn't go in there confident, thinking he can actually win the fight, then you're going to see George take over and dismantle him. But because you have to believe in yourself out there. You doubt yourself, you're not going to win.
John, last thing before we let you go, are you actually teaching at Randy's Gym in Vegas? Can people come down and are you teaching some of the classes there?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm teaching some MMA and some jiu-jitsu classes. You know, also private lessons are available too. But yeah, I'm one of the instructors down there at Randy's Gym, and it's a great facility. We've got a full-size octagon, a full-size boxing ring, full-size wrestling mat, 27 heavy bags, full-size weight gym, and cardio equipment. It's a full meal deal. It's got it all. It's the best training center I've ever been put in.
John Alessio, going to be taking on Carlos Condit for the WEC Welterweight Championship March 24th. Everybody out there, if they can, check it out. John, thanks for coming on the show, and best of luck on the 24th.
Thanks for having me.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
Full Contact Fighter.
Undefeated, no holds barred, news source of the world.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, there's a big event in Japan this past weekend, or I guess it was Monday night. K1 Heroes, many of that organization's top fighters, the more popular fighters in Japan, competed. Cal Uno, Hideo Tsukoro, Kazushi Sakuraba, of course, and some other international stars like Gary Goodridge, Melvin Manhoef, I think, and that's one fighter I think probably a lot of people are starting to pay attention to. Antonio Carvello had an interview with Melvin up on our website recently. Brennan, what was your assessment of that card? Do you think that over here in North America, sometimes we maybe look past K1 Heroes a little bit and only sort of turn to the UFC as prize, main competition, etc. in Japan? Do you think people over here sometimes forget about K1 Heroes?
Well, I think it's a fairly new organization, right? It's only a couple of years old, number one, and I don't think, although I've seen a couple of great fights in Heroes, you know, they don't typically have, they have, you know, their big coup d'etat was stealing, you know, Sakuraba away from Pride, but typically I'm not too crazy about their matchmaking, so, you know, they do showcase a lot of Japanese stars, quote unquote, but they're usually in some pretty doggy matches. So their big competition, of course, is New Year's Eve and Pride, and you know, Pride's show, even though I did knock my socks off on New Year's Eve, really was far, far better than K1. So yeah, I'm not sure. They've got some really great game fighters, and I guess the best fights in my mind came from their middleweight tournament and their lightweight tournament that took place last year.
Yeah.
But even the stars that came out of that are still haven't fought really haven't had great competition since.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, their matchmaking, and you made mention of that. There have been some cards where there's definitely some great matchups and that made for some great action in K1 Heroes, but this card, it almost seems like they were trying to, I can't even speak to what they're trying to do, but they're, you know, the couple of fights, they had Vitor Ribeiro against Uriyama, and he's a veteran fighter, but I don't think anyone really expected him to give Ribeiro any trouble. He's regarded by most as probably top five lightweights in the world. You know, you look at guys like Cal Uno, his competition wasn't that hard. Sakuraba taking on a guy, I think, only had a couple fights. Tokoro, he was fighting, a K-1 veteran who, Yasuhiro, who's got a karate background, is known as an excellent striker, but he only had a couple mixed martial arts fights as well. So, yeah, this matchup seemed to have some kind of curious... this card had some curious matchups from my point of view. It almost seemed like akin to the old Pride days where you know, you had a kind of a group of stars that Pride wanted to make sure win, and then, you know, we're bringing in competition from the states that probably weren't going to test them too much, and I don't know.
Well, I think that was definitely the case with, I think it was definitely the case with Sakuraba. You can't say that it wasn't. Like, he fought, you know, basically a guy, I think, that had two or three fights and tuned him pretty well, but, you know, it's just been a debacle with Sakuraba going to K1, and, you know, they basically bet their whole, you know, they bet the whole basket on him, and his fights have just been terrible. You know, see, he sort of got beaten to death in his first one, and you know, in the most horrific example of refereeing ever in MMA, and then his second fight back, or the third, you know, the guy was greased up, and it ended up being he lost, but it ended up being a no contest, and the guy was banned from MMA forever. And from the organization, so I think this one, you know, it was a nice slow pitch underhand right down the middle of the plate.
Well, I think you're talking about Akiyama, but I don't think he's not banned forever from the organization, is he?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's the word. That's the word on the street.
Because he's a pretty big, he's a fairly well known star in Japan. That surprises me. I know it sounds kind of familiar, but I wasn't sure I didn't know that he was banned originally for life.
Yeah, well, he's not coming back to K1. That's the word.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, I think the idea was that you know, he was supposed to be Sakuraba's big one back.
Yeah.
But he was greased, and then Manhoff is apparently greased in this in some strange turn of events in this K1 card. Manhoff was supposedly greased.
But they caught it before.
They caught it before, and apparently, they spent 5 minutes. They spent 5 minutes soaking him up with towels, and he got a yellow card before the fight. So,
and I know you've talked about Manhoff before, and I've only seen him fight a couple times. But Brennan, you think that, I know he's training with Antonio Carvalho and some other talented jiu-jitsu guys in Japan. Do you think that he could be the real deal? Could he be a legitimate world class contender at light heavyweight or 185, 190, where he usually fights?
You know, I think Manhoff is literally one step away from greatness in a bigger organization. I don't think he's going to do anything in K1 because he's never going to have anyone to fight in K1. But he's literally has, you know, he has more explosive stand up than Krokop. He's a little bit lighter. And the only thing he doesn't have right now is just that sureness in his takedown defense. And he appears to be decent. You know, he basically has good ground defense, I think, but he's still very susceptible to the takedown. But, you know, in terms, you know, Anderson Silva is a great striker, but Manhoff looks like, you know, he's got a body like Kevin Randleman and a little Kevin Randleman, you know, strikes like Anderson Silva. So, you know, immensely powerful, vicious striker, and he's got some good game. So. I think if he were in Pride or in the UFC, he'd be definitely instant star.
Brennan, there comes further word this week and speculation that the upcoming UFC 70 that will take place in the UK is going to be telecast on Spike for free due to the fact that it seems like the UFC and the HBO apparently have speculated or having problems negotiating a deal that we'll see the UFC be broadcast on HBO. Aside from the obvious that this could turn out to be a great plus for the fans, get to see a free card, what are your thoughts on sort of the surrounding circumstances or as far as the rumors and what's going on? Do you have any insight or any opinion on what could be surrounding the difficulties HBO and UFC seem to be having coming to an agreement?
Well, HBO have typically have been big promoters of boxing and have been very successful with that. But now I think the writing's on the wall. The writing's on the wall about, you know, with boxing, and they want, at least the most senior people want to move into MMA. The president of the sports end, or the vice president in charge of the sports program, didn't want to move into MMA and likened it to wrestling and said, well, we thought about doing wrestling in the 80s too, and we decided that we're just too classy for that. Basically, you know, they've had the same opinion about MMA. So the actual programming president of HBO went over his head and said, you know, we're going to air MMA, and you just figure out how to do the deal. You know, you work out the details of the deal. So I think that's that's where they are right now. So everyone who does, everyone who works at HBO Sports, I think is basically biased to boxing, and HBO is basically struggling for control of the way that UFC will be presented on HBO. So basically, they want to use their own production team, which is understandable, but they also want to use their own broadcast team. So I think that's what the UFC is pulling back from, because the last thing you want is some, like, you know, Lampley getting on there and expressing his opinions about MMA.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's the sticking point, and I think the fact that Showtime's, you know, first MMA sojourn into MMA, you know, arguably faltered, probably is giving HBO a little bit of breathing room, because you know, I think of a repeat of Spike, or, you know, repeat of UFC Fight Night on Spike, you know, got twice the ratings that the Showtime show did. But I don't see the UFC wavering on this. I think HBO is not, you know, is not a hill that they're willing to die on, the UFC. So I could see this deal not happening.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It certainly seems like there's a lot of resistance from some of the older guard or the people who are involved in promoting boxing for HBO. And, you know, that's something I don't really understand. I can understand on one hand, if you're not a fan of MMA, fine. But you would think ultimately as a business, and that's what they're concerned with, is viewerships and people watching their network. You would think that if you look at MMA, clearly some could say that, you know, maybe it's a fad, but as far as its popularity right now, and it might go down somewhat. But I think we're sort of beyond that point, aren't we, Brendan? I mean, you'd think that these guys would see the writing on the wall and realize, okay, fine, maybe we won't do the numbers that MMA has done in the last year or so, but it's here, and it's a sport that's going to forever rival boxing. You would think that they would understand this.
Well, you know, their arguments are fairly asinine. They're specious at best, because they say things like, well, boxing has this story history, and, you know, if we do start doing MMA, then we're going to lose that, or it'll be sullied, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's basically kind of a bullshit excuse, because, you know, boxing has a pretty greasy history, and the history in the last 20 years is certainly not storied whatsoever. Neither are the star boxers, and the star boxers, you know, the big names in boxing in the last 20 years are certainly no moral exemplars. So neither are the promoters, of course. So, you know, it's tough that they can, I think basically what you're seeing is sort of in, what you're seeing is a sort of internal struggle inside of HBO, and they're basically, I think, just going to hold off as long as they can, so they don't have to broadcast boxing, or they don't have to broadcast MMA.
Well, certain fighters, I would agree with you, haven't exactly been the best role models, but I don't think you should generalize too much. There's some pretty interesting people out there, and you know, I'm a fan of boxing. I don't watch it a ton. I followed it all the time when I was a kid, and then I ended up, you know, getting involved in MMA and martial arts, and that sort of changed my view of boxing. It always seemed somewhat incomplete to me, but in saying that, there's still some very talented fighters out there that I thoroughly enjoy watching, you know, I still, of course, if it's an MMA match versus a boxing match, yeah, I mean, there's no question, MMA wins, regardless of who's even fighting. I would rather watch two grassroots fighters, unknowns in MMA versus, you know, the all-star, the best possible lineup match in boxing you could think of. But that's just because I find boxing, like I said, somewhat incomplete. It's hard for me to watch that sport now and not sort of look at it and say, well, you know, he could have just got taken down there, or he was left open for a kick, etc. But that said, it is frustrating, and I think you're right. It seems to me like I would have a great deal of difficulty envisioning any kind of deal between the UFC and HBO anytime soon if they're this divided. And the fact now that Dana White can turn to a network like Spike and get his show on there, you know, he's definitely has some options, Brendan.
Well, and you know, the sad thing for HBO is that would have been, you know, that would have been arguably probably one of the best, you know, at least from my perspective, it was probably one of the best cards they're going to have in the next little while, you know. So they were offered they were offered probably the best card they could have had, and that is the card from Britain, and it basically pissed it away. So I don't know if they're going to get another opportunity like that. And just the stars aligned, I think, fairly well in that particular card.
Some interesting matchups have been finally announced. Well, I mean, they've been rumored for a while, and now the UFC started to confirm them a few days ago. And in regards to their fight night coming up, April 5th, and the first one, which everyone pretty much knew was happening for quite some time, is Melvin Guillard versus Joe Stevenson. And Brennan, without going into picks, etc., are you excited to see that fight? And how does that rate as far for you as a main event fight for the fight night series?
Yeah, I was actually surprised that was going to be. I think it could have the potential to be a great fight, but it also has the potential to be fairly disappointing. You know, I think it's not guaranteed to be a great fight. And I think if Stevenson gets Garrett down early, then he'll be in big trouble. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think it has the potential to be an awesome fight, but I was actually pleasantly surprised that it was going to be the main card.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too. We've talked about this in the past, and you notice on this card, there's several Japanese fighters fighting Mishima, Nakamura, Kinoshita, Hironaka. It was supposed to fight Jeff Joslin, and now they're looking for an opponent for Hironaka. But you see that trend somewhat continue, Brendan, with the UFC continuing to bring in more Japanese fighters.
And I think that, I think if you take Dana White at his word, he's looking for the best fighters. And, I think that, we're seeing that now, not only in word, but in deed. And I think you could argue that that's, the UFC has turned a corner in such a way that now we can see, the best fighters from around the world. And it's not an enormous logistical problem to have guys like that fighting in the UFC now.
Mm-hmm. Brendan, you enjoy the rest of your week, buddy. We'll talk to you in a couple of days. And, yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
All right, Kelsey, you too.